Chapter 1. Creed, Colorado, June 1888. Charity Montgomery sat back against the train seat and looked out the window at the passing landscape. High mountain deserts had faded away to the majestic mountains of the San Juans. The Denver Rio Grande steam engine chugged up the ever-increasing grade toward Creed, the quaint little mining town where her family now lived. For the first time in 2 years, she was going home. A sigh escaped her lips.
"Are you all right, Charity? You seem a bit melancholy today. I would think you'd be overjoyed to be going home."
Charity pulled her gaze from the window and met the kind, knowing eyes of Agnes Hanover, her traveling companion and her benefactor.
"Aggie, you're always fretting about us girls. I'm fine. I was thinking about Creed and the last time I was there. I hadn't realized until just this moment how much I'd missed it. I suppose it's the first time I've ever called a place home, and it actually meant something to me," Charity admitted.
"Well, Creed is your home. It's where your family is now. Your sisters were so excited when I told them you were coming home this summer. I know they can't wait to see you. 2 years is a long time to be away from the ones you love. Don't you agree?"
"Yes, it's a long damn—"
Charity stopped short at the sight of Aggie's raised eyebrows.
"Sorry, old habits. Yes, it has been a long time to be away from those I love."
She was certain Aggie knew she wasn't just referring to her sisters, their husbands, and her nieces and nephews either. The woman confirmed Charity's suspicions when she spoke again.
"Have you had any word from him during your absence?"
Aggie was always the direct one. Polite, but straight to the heart of the matter. Perhaps being married to an attorney such as her husband, Hiram, had taught her to be that way.
"No, not a single word, but I hadn't expected him to write. Miles doesn't strike me as the stationery and pen sort anyway."
She tried to joke away her pain at the unceremonious way Sheriff Grayson had delivered his ultimatum to her, but he had given her a choice. Go to this school Hiram and Aggie were offering to send her to, or go to jail. She had chosen the school, although jail would have been a shorter sentence. 2 years was, indeed, a long time to be away. Charity had often tried to figure out what she had done to push that man over the edge. She could never understand his aggravation with her. But over the edge he had gone, and the only thing that would appease him at the time was her agreeing to go. Aggie smiled.
"He was rather direct in his approach. Hiram and I still talk about how flustered he was when he threatened to hogtie you, throw you over his saddle, and deliver you to the nearest military fort. He was very adamant about you staying out of his sheriffing business, if I recall."
Charity smiled and averted her gaze back to the window. Aggie saw too much.
"Yeah, I kind of wish I'd let him do it. That might have been fun, don't you think?"
She grinned at Aggie's feigned shock at her bold statement. The woman was proper, but certainly not prudish. Aggie smiled back with that little twinkle in her blue eyes Charity loved.
"Charity Montgomery, you little minx."
Charity grinned again and settled back against the train seat. She studied the woman sitting across from her.
"You and Hiram have been married a long time, haven't you?"
Aggie nodded.
"Yes, a long time. How did you and Hiram meet, if you don't mind me asking such a personal question?"
Charity had heard little dribs and drabs about Hiram and Aggie's love story, but no one had ever just come out and told it all. She watched Aggie hesitate.
"It ain't none of my business, Aggie. I mean, it isn't any of my business, so don't mind me and my questions. I was just curious, that's all."
Charity was still trying to talk like a lady, but 20-some-odd years of talking like a mule skinner outweighed 2 years at a fancy lady's finishing school. Aggie reached over and patted Charity's knee.
"Oh, I don't mind sharing our love story with you, sweetheart. It's just that there are some not-so-happy parts that I'd prefer not to relive. You understand, don't you?"
Charity knew about the not-so-happy parts in one's life. Just about every part of her life had some pain associated with it.
"Yes, I do understand, and I'm sorry I brought it up."
"Thank you." Aggie sat back against the train seat again and worried with something in her reticle. Charity returned her attention to the scenery drifting past the window. Tall pine trees stood guard along the Rio Grande River's rocky banks. Heavy boughs of soft green needles rocked in the gentle mountain breezes. It was as if they were waving her home. It felt so very good to be back. The loud bang of a gunshot sounded close by. Aggie jumped, her eyes round in shock.
What do you suppose that's all about?
Another shot went off, and the sound of a scuffle near the train's rear door signaled a problem.
Aggie, keep your head down and pretend you're asleep.
Aggie did as she suggested. She was getting ready to assume the same position when the door banged open and the wounded conductor was shoved in by a man wearing a bandana over his face. Charity stood and patted the pocket of her traveling dress. She never traveled anywhere without the protection of her two-shot Derringer close at hand. A girl could never be too careful on the streets of Boston.
Charity, where are you going? It could be dangerous.
Aggie whispered and reached out to grab her arm. She watched the man wearing the bandana looking around the almost empty train car. His eyes landed on her as she made her way up the aisle.
Sit down, woman. Sit down now.
The man pointed his gun at her and barked directions.
That man is wounded,
she stated as matter-of-factly as she could, staring down the business end of an outlaw's gun. Charity cast a look around at the other passengers. An elderly gentleman and his wife sat a few seats in front of where she and Aggie sat. Across from the elderly couple sat another man, perhaps in his 40s, with his teenage son. All the other passengers that had ridden down from Denver had gotten off the train at Wagon Wheel Gap to enjoy the hot springs. That was fortunate for them, but not so for the few remaining passengers.
I said sit down. Are you stupid or something?
The man behind the mask mumbled at her. Mentally, she rolled her eyes. Why did all men think women were addle-brained idiots? Even this moronic oaf assumed, because she didn't jump to obey his command, she was a dim-witted imbecile.
Men.
She made eye contact with the wounded man.
Are you all right, sir?
He nodded.
I think so.
Charity could see he was losing a lot of blood, and if someone didn't help staunch it, he might very well die before they reached Creed. And that was entirely unacceptable.
I said sit down, he repeated.
Instead of following his order, she batted her eyes at the idiot and rested the back of her hand against her forehead.
I'm sorry, sir. I would sit down, but I'm simply unable to do so at the moment.
She whined in her best damsel in distress voice. She pretended to stumble and catch herself against the closest train seat.
And why the hell not?
The man stepped closer, waving his gun at her.
What's wrong with you?
Charity bent over as if she had the ague and moaned for dramatic effect. The man stepped closer.
I asked you a question, woman. Are you sick or something?
She could see the tips of his scuffed boots and could feel the cold steel of the man's gun barrel against her shoulder. He was close enough to put her plan into motion. She nodded, still bent over at the waist.
Yes, sir. I'm sick, all right.
Charity gritted her teeth and placed one hand on her stomach and the other inside her dress pocket. Her fingers gripped the pearl handle of her pistol. The robber poked at her with the barrel of his gun again, and it was making her mad.
Please don't do that.
Charity really didn't want an altercation with this man, and she softened her demand with,
Please, sir.
She had worked too hard these last 2 years to be a lady, or at least look and act and talk like a lady, but she could never stand by and watch this low-life piece of cow crap hurt innocent people without trying to do something to prevent it. He chuckled and poked her with the gun barrel again.
You talking to me, little lady?
Her fingers clenched, and she called on every ounce of self-restraint she possessed to answer the man calmly.
Yes, sir, I'm talking to you, and I asked you very politely not to poke me with your gun. I find it very irritating, sir.
She loaded the last word with heavy sarcasm so even this boneheaded jackass would get the message that she was being sarcastic.
Is that a fact? You,
he poked her.
Don't,
he poked her again.
Like it, do you?
He poked her once more, and as far as Charity was concerned, it was one too many times. A girl had limits on just how much she was willing to take. She slowly straightened to her full height of 5'9" and stared the robber down. Her eyes focused on the man's brown ones just above the filthy bandana he wore to hide his identity.
That's what I said. I don't like it. Are you hard of hearing or just plain stupid?
She doubled up her left hand into a fist while her right hand rested on the pistol inside her dress pocket. Adrenaline pulsed through her body as she prepared for whatever came next. It had been 2 years since she had an honest-to-goodness fist fight. Exhilaration at the thought pushed a wide smile across her face. Yes, sirree. She was definitely up for it.
Charity, please be careful.
She heard Aggie's voice pleading with her. The man's shocked, dark eyes glared at her.
Are you calling me stupid, lady?
He deliberately poked her again with his gun barrel and waited for her reaction. She knew with certainty the idiot taunting her wasn't expecting a woman to challenge him. Well, it was time to set the bonehead straight.
Yeah, I can see where you take offense to me calling you stupid. It just don't seem right now, does it?
She said, exaggerating her words. He looked somewhat appeased.
But it is kind of hard for me not to speak the truth when it's plain as the nose on my face. And if you think that you can keep poking me with that gun barrel after I've asked you real nice to stop, more than once I might add, then you're even dumber than you look.
The wrinkles around his squinty eyes told her he was grinning at her like he thought poking her with his gun was funny. But if he did it again, he would learn that she wasn't kidding. He reached out and jabbed her with it again.
What you gonna do, little lady? You gonna wrestle me for it? I might like that now that I think about it.
He taunted her. Charity shook her head and offered him a sweet smile.
Sir, I'm quite offended you would assume that I would resort to that sort of thing. Can't you see that I'm a lady?
The man eyed her with confusion at her change of tactics.
Ladies do not wrestle, sir. We'd rather punch at our adversaries.
Then she punched him as hard as she could, hitting him square on the nose. She smiled with satisfaction to hear it break under her bruised knuckles. He slid to his knees, cupping his profusely bleeding nose. She chastised him like a misbehaving schoolboy.
Now, if you'll remember, I asked you real nice to stop poking me, didn't I? So the way I figure, that broken nose is on you, buckaroo.
Ow, you bitch! The man growled.
Blood dripped out of his nose and off his chin. He rose and cuffed his broken nose with his left hand. Then he raised his gun with his right hand.
I'm gonna kill you, you red-headed she-devil!
Charity pulled the trigger on her two-shot derringer from inside her dress pocket, sending a bullet through her dress and into the man's thigh. He fell backwards and flailed on the train floor, grabbing his leg.
I'm gonna kill you, you...
Charity stood over the man.
Yes, you've said that already. I believe you left off the red-headed she-devil part, if my memory serves me correctly.
He roared and reached for his pistol lying next to him on the floor. She cocked the second shot in her pistol. He froze at the sound. She smiled down at him.
There's another one where that came from, if you don't leave that gun right where it is. I know you ain't the brightest kid your mama had, so let me be clear. The next bullet is going straight into that empty head of yours if you don't start playing nice. Got it?
The conductor entered the car and stopped short.
I just came to tell you that someone tried to rob the train, but it looks like he wasn't alone.
Charity spoke to the conductor. Her eyes and attention fully focused on the man lying on the floor, blood soaking his pant leg.
How many others?
Just the one in the next car, but he did better than this one. He got away clean.
Well, this one was just too dumb to run.
She grinned at the man glaring at her from the floor.
How long before we get to Creed, conductor? You might want to check on your co-worker there. Either this man or the one that got away shot him. He's bleeding pretty bad.
We're pulling in now. Should be stopped in less than 5 minutes.
Well, that's excellent news. Would you please send someone to get the sheriff as soon as we arrive? I fear the gentleman on the floor could use a doctor, too. I would surely hate for him to bleed to death before he can stand trial.
She kicked the man's gun toward the conductor.
You might want to keep that pointed at him until the sheriff arrives. He's a bit dense between the ears, and he's just stupid enough to push his luck.
She returned to her seat and offered Aggie a sweet, innocent smile and watched the train depot appear in the windows. She inhaled a deep breath of clean mountain air.
I'm so glad to be home.
Aggie shook her head and gave her an exasperated look. The train chugged into town and shuddered to a stop. The conductor stood at the end of the train aisle and blew his whistle, still holding the gun on the bleeding bandit. Another conductor entered the car.
You need something? The man stopped short when he saw his fellow employee holding a gun on a bleeding man and another co-worker bleeding from one of the train seats. "Go get the sheriff, Elmer. And hurry." The man's voice trembled and the gun shook in his hand. The second man nodded and left. Charity sighed to Aggie.
"Yes, ma'am. I'm so glad to be home. There's really no place like it. Don't you think so?"
She wasn't really expecting an answer, so she stood and nodded politely to the remaining passengers, who seemed rooted in their seats. They stared at her and slowly nodded in return. Charity pulled her plissé from under her seat and led the way up the aisle to the other end of the train car. Aggie followed close behind. She stepped out of the train car and ran straight into the broad, hard chest of the man behind the lawman's star. The lawman's star. Strong fingers gripped her arms to keep her from falling backwards.
"I'm sorry, ma'am.
His deep voice vibrated against her body when he spoke. She pulled her eyes from the star on his chest to his mouth, and then higher, all the way up to those gray eyes of his. They were just as she remembered, and her heart leapt with joy to see him again.
"Miles," she whispered.
The man's eyes rounded in shocked recognition. Two heartbeats passed before he removed his hands from her arms and took a step back. He looked her up and down, taking in her new appearance as if his eyes were lying to him. His lips moved as if he were trying to find the words to describe what he was seeing. Finally, he managed to speak her name.
"Charity? Is that you?"
She nodded and gave him her sweetest smile.
"Hello, Sheriff Grayson. It's been a long time, hasn't it? I'm so glad to see you looking so... well."
Charity recited her lessons in her head. A lady never allows a gentleman to know she's happy to see him. A lady never makes the first advance. A lady never... Oh, there was a whole list of don'ts on the subject of a proper greeting to a gentleman. But right now, all she wanted to do was throw her arms around his neck and kiss the holy hell out of him. She resisted the urge. After all, her sisters and Aggie had convinced her that the only way she would ever gain Miles Grayson's attention was to be the kind of lady he preferred.
They better be right.
She turned to Aggie.
"I do believe I see Hiram over there by the carriage waiting for us."
She hooked arms with Aggie and turned her back on the one man who had the power to turn her world upside down. She hoped her lessons would make it possible to turn the tables on him instead. Sheriff Miles Grayson stood rooted in place while he watched the woman, who had turned his world upside down just a few short years ago, walk toward Hiram Hanover's carriage. It had been 2 years since he had barged into the Hanover's home and threatened to hogtie her and throw her over his saddle and deliver her to the nearest fort. It wasn't what she had done that was so heinous. In fact, he couldn't really remember anything about the day except when she had caught him in his office alone, she had thrown herself into his arms and kissed the hell out of him. He remembered that like it was this morning. What the hell had she done to herself? She had changed dang near everything. She looked nothing like the woman who arrived from Kansas City to help her sister, Grace, fight a murder charge a few years back. That woman had been hell on wheels from the second he laid eyes on her. He had never wanted a woman more. And the tall, red-headed, wild child had made it clear she wanted him too. But he couldn't allow his attraction for her to affect his abilities to protect and serve as a lawman. Distractions were not an option. He had learned that painful lesson from his father's mistakes. He openly stared at the woman as Hiram helped her and his wife into the carriage. What the hell? She looked like an honest-to-goodness... woman. And that meant he was going to have to double down in his efforts to stay as far away from her as he possibly could.
"Sheriff, are you all right? The robber's in here."
The train conductor pointed to the same car Miss Montgomery had just vacated. He could still smell her perfume in the air.
"Damn it to hell."
He tore his gaze away from the one woman who could make Calamity Jane look like a Sunday school teacher while making a man throw caution to the wind. He had been aware of the rumors that she might be coming back to Creed, but he had no idea it was today. He wished he had known so he could have been better prepared for her appearance.
"Sheriff?"
The conductor called out again.
"I'm coming."
He pulled his sidearm out of its holster and stepped aboard the train. He immediately saw one of the train conductors holding a gun on a man that was lying on the train car floor. Dried blood covered his nose, mouth, and chin. His eyes were beginning to blacken, and there was a telltale stain of blood on his pants surrounding a bullet-sized hole.
"What the hell?"
He looked at the conductor for answers.
"This here varmint tried to rob the train between Wagon Wheel Gap and here. He shot one on our co-workers and threatened my passengers,"
the conductor offered by way of explanation.
"You do this?"
Miles looked at the small bullet hole in the man's pants and the large caliber gun the train employee was holding. The caliber was different.
"No, sir. I just picked up his gun when the lady told me to."
He tried to hand the gun to the sheriff.
"I'll take it after we get him handcuffed."
Miles took out his handcuffs and cuffed the man's arms in front of him. Once he had the man secured, he took the gun from the conductor.
"You said a lady told you to take the gun."
"What lady?" Miles already had a sinking feeling he knew exactly what lady the man was referring to. He didn't believe in coincidences. The man on the floor spoke up.
"It was that damn she-devil that did this to me, Sheriff. You ought to be arresting her for putting my life in jeopardy."
He jerked the man to his feet, giving him time to catch his breath from the pain of the bullet still in his leg.
"You put your own life in jeopardy when you decided to rob this train, you mule-headed jackass. Now move."
Miles pushed the man down the train car aisle without too much regard for his injuries.
"So you're telling me that a woman did this to you? That doesn't say too much for your bad hombre reputation, now does it?"
He goaded the man's pride.
"Now, she wasn't no ordinary woman, Sheriff. You should have seen her. She punched me in the damn nose. With her fist, mind you. Now what kind of woman rolls up her fist and punches a man in the nose? I'm telling you, Sheriff, she was some kind of crazy woman. Ain't never seen nothing like her before."
A ghost of a smile crossed Miles' lips.
"Yep, she is some kind of crazy, that's for sure."
He mused more to himself than to the man he was escorting to the doctor's office. He pushed the man out of the train in front of him.
"What's your name?"
"Ain't telling you nothing, lawman."
"Well, that's fine. I got a drawer full of wanted posters back at the jail, and I suspect your ugly mug is on one of them. Now get moving."
The nameless would-be robber limped in front of him for the 2 blocks to Doc Howard's office. Miles nodded to a couple of men they passed on the street. The ladies left the boardwalk or ducked inside a store when they saw them coming. He understood their trepidation. A man in handcuffs and a pant leg covered in blood was a sight to see, not to mention his battered face. The man looked like he'd run straight into a charging bull. But Miles knew now it wasn't a bull that had done the damage. He turned the man down the alley to where Doc's office was located and pushed the man inside. The doc was hunched over his desk writing in a journal.
"Hey, Doc, I got a patient for you."
Miles pushed the man over toward the examination table. He stood back and gave the doctor room to look after his prisoner, but he was ready in case his prisoner decided to make a break for freedom. Doc rose from his desk, helped the man onto the examination table, and made him comfortable.
"And what do we have here?"
Doc asked the man as he laid him back and began looking at his nose. Miles answered for him.
"What we have here is a man who decided to rob this afternoon's train coming up from Wagon Wheel Gap."
Doc's eyebrows rose.
"Is that right? It doesn't look like you fared too well, young man. You might want to rethink your career choices."
Miles smiled.
"I always did like your sense of humor, Doc."
Doc Howard grinned and turned back to his patient.
"Okay, now, let's start with that bullet hole in your leg." You must have given the sheriff a real hard time. Sheriff's not usually that rough on his prisoners."
"It wasn't the sheriff that did this, Doc. It was that red-headed she-devil on the train."
Doc Howard cut the man's pant leg and cleaned around the bullet wound. Doc turned to Miles.
"Red-headed she-devil? If I didn't know better, I'd say that description sounds like..."
"Exactly like. It was her. I saw her myself. She arrived on the train today. Same one he tried to rob. She stepped off the train just before I arrested, or rather, rescued him."
He nodded to the man on the table.
"So, Charity Montgomery has come home to roost."
The doc grinned at him again. This time, Miles didn't find as much humor in the man's wit. He didn't comment, either.
"That must have been quite a surprise for some folks."
Doc cut him another amused glance and then approached his patient.
Are you ready to get this over with?
The man nodded, but if Miles was judging by the look of fear in the patient's eyes, he was anything but ready. Doc pulled his medical bag closer and cut the man's pant leg off.
Well, the good news is, since the small caliber bullet was fired at close range, it went clean through the muscle. I'll stitch up the hole and clean it up to prevent infection. Your prisoner here should be as good as new in about 2 to 4 weeks.
Thanks, Doc. The man grimaced as Doc stitched him up. When Doc Howard was finished with the leg wound, he wiped his hands on a towel and studied the man's face.
She do this too?
His question directed to Miles.
According to my prisoner here and the witnesses back on the train, it would seem so.
I thought she was at finishing school back east somewhere for the last 2 years. You would think the first thing that school would teach a young woman was not to punch a person in the nose. And the second thing would be shooting people was impolite.
Miles grimaced. I'm sure they did their best. You forget who we're talking about here, Doc.
Stubborn, if I remember correctly. Doc turned back to his patient.
Stubborn doesn't even come close.
Now, this is going to hurt like hell, son. I'm going to straighten that nose of yours, and then I'm going to tape it to your face so it won't move. Here's a double shot of whiskey. I'll give you a minute before I do it, okay?
The man didn't look like he thought much of the idea, but he drank down the glass of whiskey anyway.
Here goes. Doc placed his hands on the man's face, his hands on each side of the man's nose, and in a split second, snapped the bones and cartilage back into place. The man let out a holler a person could hear all the way to the north end of town.
Damn, Doc, that hurt like hell,
the man moaned.
I told you it would, did I not?
Doc grinned at Miles while he taped the man's nose tight against his face.
That should hold it in place if you don't get into another fistfight.
He won't have to worry about that. He's got a private cell all to himself.
There you go, Sheriff. Your prisoner's ready for a good night's sleep in your jail.
Miles nodded.
Come on, let's get you settled in. Then I need to pay a visit to a red-headed she-devil